We just watched one of the most epic games in sports history, 29-point comeback for the New York Knicks over the San Antonio Spurs in Game 4 of the NBA Finals. Tom Haverstraw and I broke down every single angle from that game and also touched on at the end the Giannis Antetokounmpo stuff. There's something brewing. So we get into that at the end of the show, but first we go along on the almost unbelievable basketball game I've ever seen. Woo! That was the greatest game I've ever seen in my life. Talk about it, Tom Haverstraw.
Dude, are you floating? I'm still floating from last night.
I cannot believe it. I just can't believe it. I was there, 29-point lead, Tom, and you know, it's the type of thing where it's like, oh, maybe get to bed early tonight. And certain people turn off their TV and get going to bed, work in the morning, and you know, leaving early. I'm thinking, oh, maybe I'll leave beginning of the fourth quarter, right? Because I got to drive home to Boston tomorrow, and it's like, no, it's at 29, and then it's at 20. And then it's a 15, and then it goes back up to 18. It's back down to 15. Then they get it under 10, and they're just chipping away. And that was, to me, Tom, the thing that was like so thrilling about this comeback. It wasn't like they had this crazy shooting hot stretch. They weren't even really that efficient in the second half. It's just they constantly chipped away, and the Spurs just fell apart offensively, and the Knicks made almost every play. I mean, Josh Hart had the missed dunk, and they missed some plays, but oh my God, OG Anunoby pictured on the screen, 33 points in the game, playoff hero, the block on Fox, the clutch threes, the put back at the end of the game. I'm still on a high, Tom. I'm still on a high.
I'm floating just like OG Anunoby, floating into the paint for that immaculate tip-in, just unimpeded, just rose above the entire trees and tipped it in, and the whole place, I was not there at the game, but I can only imagine as Mike Breen is watching that and calling it and saying, this place is shaking right now. I don't even know what kind of bedlam is going. Look at this. The crowd is going nuts. You can talk all about the Celebrity Row, and the energy in the crowd might have been a little bit different because of all the money that it takes to buy these tickets, but you cannot say that the Knicks fans didn't bring it in this game. What an atmosphere. And watching at home, I just look at that. Jerry Seinfeld, just like, Taylor, oh my God, what was that? What was that out there? I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what I saw. And it, you know, whether it was the biggest comeback ever or whether it was the biggest collapse ever,
both.
Those are two of the same sides of the same coin, right? Mm-hmm. Two sides of the same coin that everything had to go perfect for the Knicks, and everything had to go disastrously wrong for the Spurs, and that's exactly what happened.
100% spot on, Tom. I mean, 30 points in the second half for the Spurs. Part of that is because Knicks clamping down on defense. Part of that is just piss poor shot selection by San Antonio settling for three pointers. Part of it is great decisions by Mike Brown inserting Jose Alvarado and sticking with him. He had that like loop layup where he kind of did like a little spin, you know, turn in the paint and turn around, got the layup. He hit the three in the energy he brought as a secondary ball handler, the defense, the moving around off ball with Wemby defending him sometimes. You can look at that side, but can you also say Castle, fourth foul, 10 minutes left in the third quarter, and Mitch Johnson goes with not his other ball handler, Dylan Harper, he goes with Keldon Johnson. And that, I think that in part is why like the Spurs offense just sputtered in the third quarter. So it was things on each side of these teams that played into an epic collapse and an epic comeback that just makes it truly, truly the best basketball game I've ever seen. I mean, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic, exaggerating last night. I mean, the fact that game three, they lose at home with that high, it's like the Trump curse game. They blow it against San Antonio in game three. Then game four, they're down 29 points, dude. The anxiousness in the crowd that night, there were so many moments. Emmy, our amazing producer here at Yahoo Sports, was sitting next to me, and like it was like silent. We'd turn to each other. It was like so quiet. You could hear a pin drop sometimes. Yeah. And then it just turned into what it did. Like, I just can't believe it. I genuinely can't believe it. And it's really like, it summarizes why sports are so awesome, Tom, right? You never know what's going to happen. It all happens live in front of you.
And Jose Alvarado and Jalen Brunson didn't play together this entire postseason and then goes to this lineup, Mike Brown.
Is that true,
changes everything.
No minutes together?
Yeah, two guys had not been on the floor at the same time. And some of the lineups that Mike Brown pulled out, they hadn't done that, where you have two ball handlers and one Jose Alvarado that Wemby is just trying to chase all around the floor, and they're getting actions. Like, one of the problems that we saw with the Spurs, De'Aaron Fox had a bunch of boneheaded plays. Same for Victor Wembanyama at the free throw line, missing those two clutch free throws. Ugh. We'll talk about that in a bit. But it seemed like the Knicks were getting good offense, good movement, getting paint touches, whereas the Spurs were totally complacent and happy to just take early transition threes and throw them up without any of that healthy offense. And I think they got high on their own supply in that first half. I think they got drunk on all those three-pointers, tough three-pointers. Yes, there were some wide-open threes in there, but they had incredible shot-making that the Spurs felt like, okay, we're going to do the Joe Mazzulla Boston Celtics offense where we're just going to fire up a bunch of threes and not get 2 feet into the paint. I mean, it just was Jose Alvarado was sensational. His plus-minus in this series is in many ways telling the story. A lot of great things happen when he's on the floor. But man, what a moment for New York. I mean, that this kid comes in for the Knicks and is basically glued to the bench for much of this postseason and becomes, you know, I mean, for Red Sox fans, I think about Trot Nixon and Billy Miller, guys who just like came onto the team and felt like, I will wear that jersey for the rest of my life. But they're not homegrown talents like Alvarado is. This is just another level of fandom and another level of emotion that Knicks fans are feeling watching this guy play in a miraculous comeback. He had a huge function in it.
It's just so cool. I mean, born in Brooklyn, moved to Queens when he was a kid, grew up in New York. He's a Knicks fan growing up, and here he is. He gets traded. It was a great trade by the Knicks at the deadline. They were aggressive. They made a move around the edges thinking there might be a night Jose Alvarado can help us win a game. And it happened on the biggest game of all of their lives ever. And it's this hometown kid having this moment is just truly like little things like this just make it all the more special, really, for the Knicks side of things. And I mean, Brunson, the guy starting above him, obviously at the end of the game, he misses the three-pointer. OG Anunoby has the amazing putback, but Brunson himself, this was his best game of the series. 36 points on 12 of 25. I felt like he was more effective at creating space against Stephon Castle, finding his spots, getting into a rhythm. And the Knicks as well, he got a few at-rim chances in that second half as well, where it's like, I had Draymond on my pod earlier this week, and he's like, he's just going to see the ball go in. He needs to get in a rhythm. They did get him in a rhythm with some of those at-rim opportunities, and on top of just, I mean, just the special shot-making from Brunson. Some of the shots he hit down the stretch were just miraculous for New York. And even then, Tom, like, on the play that OG Anunoby has the epic tip-in to give them the lead and ultimately the win, Brunson's drawing two there with how effective he was in that game. Wemby's all the way out, 25 feet away from the basket, giving OG Anunoby a free lane there. The Spurs screwed that up. OG inbound, and they kind of forgot about him, right? And that's what disaster allowed him that lane.
Absolute disaster. Mitch Johnson, I don't know what you did in the timeout or what the communication breakdown was, but when they went out onto the floor, they were pointing. There was 5.7 seconds left. You just had a timeout, and Wemby and De'Aaron Fox, they're all pointing at each other like, who am I supposed to be guarding? I don't know what we're doing out here. And then they got to get and they got to find who they're guarding, and De'Aaron Fox like, I guess I'm not taking the inbounder. OG is going to be wide open here. And then when he passes it, Fox, if you notice, Kev, he wasn't going at Jalen Brunson with his hands up and doing a hard trap. He was just doing it lackadaisically, like kind of floating over toward Jalen. Look at this hard double. And this is not a hard double by De'Aaron Fox. And then it allows OG Anunoby a clear lane to go to the cup. And what as a basketball player, this is what you dream of. It's what you dream of is getting crashing hard at the rim. The ball falls right in front of the rim, bounces off, and you've got the ability to rise up and touch it and make the putback in a moment that Knicks fans will remember forever. But I cannot stress this enough. De'Aaron Fox had an all-time blunder against OG Anunoby earlier to lead to this point. Also, Mitch Johnson coming out of this timeout. Whatever the breakdown was, inexcusable for the Spurs to look so discombobulated on this play, leave OG Anunoby free reign to get to the hoop. What I wrote about after the game was, I think Jalen Brunson took a brilliant shot here because if he takes it early, that allows an offensive rebound chance without Wemby nearby. So he gets Wemby on him. He sees De'Aaron come hard for the double, and he's like, I'm getting this up early because I know not only am I going to have OG coming off and running off from the perimeter on a great chase at the rim, you also are pulling Wemby away from the rebound chance. So a brilliant strategy by Jalen Brunson. And I don't think anyone talked about it after the game, like honestly and candidly about the breakdown. But man, that was a coaching breakdown there that the Spurs did not know what they were doing coming out of that timeout, and that there was not a hard double on Jalen Brunson, and they let OG Anunoby go unimpeded to the rim.
Mitch Johnson, I mean, like, you're nailing it there, Tom, with that blunder he had. I think it was a disastrous second half for him. The entire second half, Castle, the fourth foul at the 10-minute mark of the third quarter, he goes with Keldon Johnson instead of Dylan Harper in that moment. He leans on Keldon Johnson in that game, plays almost 20 minutes. Carter Bryant, who I thought had his best first half of the series, didn't play a single second in the second half of the game, still leaning on Keldon Johnson. Ball in the hands of Fox all the time, still down the stretch of the game, despite so many of his blunders and issues throughout the entire postseason, particularly in these finals. I know he's a rookie. To me, Dylan Harper is the guy creating more quality shots, especially with San Antonio. They fell in love with the three-pointer. They were settling for so many shots. There's nothing stagnant. They weren't creating second side actions. Harper, a downhill attacker who could create that, he didn't go to it. It felt like he was letting Wembanyama settle outside for some jumpers as well. He had 8 three-pointers in the game after game 3, in which we saw the Spurs finally figure out how to get him to the basket. And like, just over and over again, they're up to, I was rewatching the game on my drive back today. I was using self-driving. Don't worry, I was being very safe. 230 straight miles straight of artificial intelligence bringing me home safely. And as I was watching the game back, I didn't almost realize it last night watching it live, but when the Spurs were up 20 still, it wasn't until it got down to 4 that they called a timeout. I was like, no way it was really that long, because there were some like pauses, if I remember correctly, in the game last night. But like, it was from 20 to 4 until he called a timeout. So I thought he was too slow with the timeouts. You talked about that end game already, Tom, with the blunder on the OG putback opportunity. And I didn't even mention just now, Wemby playing 44 minutes in the game, even though they had a big cushion. And in a game like this, I thought this is the night you throw Cornette out there for more than 58 seconds in the second half to give Wemby a breather so he's not just completely exhausted at the end of the game. And I think that exhaustion, that fatigue, that played a factor in those 2 brick free throws he had. It was a choke job. It was mental, because as a 90%, nearly 90% free throw shooter with elite touch from the line, you miss those 2. It's mental. But what plays into mental is physical fatigue. And I thought he was exhausted down the stretch of that game. And that's in part, again, on Mitch Johnson not giving him breathers early when they had 20 to 30 point lead, right? And I just thought Mitch Johnson was just... Fox saved him, because Mitch Johnson's not getting enough blame, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, man, we just saw a horrible process and a horrible result. In the second half, according to Dean Oliver at ESPN, the godfather of analytics, in his charting from Genius IQ, the Spurs shot quality in the second half, you talk about not taking a timeout until the lead got down to 4. The Spurs' shot quality was 44% in the second half, the lowest they posted in any half all season long. That's not just playoffs. The shot quality was the worst we've seen by the Spurs in any half all season long. And you said it right. Didn't call the timeouts, didn't set things up, didn't make the right substitutions. I don't think Spurs fans want to see Keldon Johnson again and for the rest of the series. And Dylan Harper was the only guy who can consistently get into the paint and get 2 feet into the paint and finish at the rim. He had that baseline drive on OG Anunoby where Mike Breen and Tim Legler and Richard Jefferson were just laughing at how absurd it is that a 20-year-old rookie is able to do that to OG Anunoby. And then he barely got the ball the rest of the game because De'Aaron Fox was in charge of running the offense. And man, I wrote about this and people got really upset that I was singling out De'Aaron Fox. But we have to remember something here. This problem is only about to begin. De'Aaron Fox signed a 4-year max extension in the offseason. They traded for him last year under the pretense that, hey, we're going to have an extension coming for De'Aaron Fox secured. Rich Paul has talked openly about how he identified San Antonio as this is Victor Wembanyama is going to be the face of the NBA. I want to hitch my wagon to Victor Wembanyama. And he gets De'Aaron Fox billed as this veteran guy, clutch player of the year, someone who has been in the playoffs where a lot of these rookies, second-year guys have not been in the playoffs yet. Wemby has not been in the playoffs yet. And he was supposed to come in as the guy who is going to stabilize everything. And his 4 turnovers in the second half were so devastating and debilitating, but also the blunders in terms of just you want to have him steadying everybody and be able to communicate. And we did not see that. And in one of the most calamitous moments that we'll ever see in the NBA Finals, getting the ball on your own half court with 12 seconds left, with OG Anunoby a few feet behind you, and De'Aaron Fox is not prime De'Aaron Fox anymore, which is part of the problem of this max extension. He doesn't have the legs. A lot of times, early in his career, he's able to get to the rim before OG and smash that. Early in the career, I remember people were making comps about Russell Westbrook. He's not that anymore. And he's a statue oftentimes offensively. He just can't get around guys like he used to. And after the game, De'Aaron Fox said, and this, by the way, is a great stop from Wemby here to get the big time stop. And the ball squeaks out. De'Aaron Fox chases it down. And in this moment, he could just dribble it out, beg the team to foul him, and then get to the free throw line to go up 3 potentially and foul again to not allow them to hit a 3-pointer and the game's over. And in that moment, he decides to challenge OG Anunoby, the best defender on the Knicks, way bigger than De'Aaron Fox, and a moment that I think will live in infamy for the San Antonio Spurs. And there's some people online, man, that have one screen grab of him.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
OG had his hand on De'Aaron Fox's wrist. Yeah, saying like this is a foul. He blocked him. He had a hand on the ball.
Got ball first.
And yes, he touched his arm after he blocked the shot. But when De'Aaron Fox says I thought I was going to be able to outrun him, all I could think about was, man, that's the thing about the old days. They're the old days. De'Aaron Fox is not that guy anymore. And I think that was a big problem in the second half is a lot of the offense, they were trying to drive through De'Aaron Fox. It was disastrous. And the OG Anunoby tip-in, I think if you're going to blame one person, it's probably Mitch Johnson that he left De'Aaron Fox out to dry there. But this was not De'Aaron Fox's best performance and not his best finals series. And I do think that it's a big problem that the Spurs have to grapple with is we've got Stephon Castle and Dylan Harper, and it was just too much of De'Aaron Fox and all his blunders late in the game.
And I'll tell you what, Castle, he's got balls of steel. Those clutch free throws he hit down the stretch of the game after crashing the boards. I mean, Josh Hart got bailed out as well. He had the missed dunk. He didn't box out successfully. Stephon Castle. Castle hits those free throws. The dude's just stone cold constantly. And I mean, you have that dude. You got Dylan Harper who gets into the paint at will, even as a 20-year-old rookie. And then you have De'Aaron Fox. Caitlin Cooper, the great writer who covers the Pacers, had a stat she posted last night on X where she said Fox had 44 touches in the second half. That's the most of any Spur. Only 5 of those touches touch the paint. And San Antonio scored 0.39 points per chance out of those touches. He shot 2 of 6 with 2 turnovers when defended by OG Anunoby. No one for the Spurs attempted more than 6 shots against any other matchup, Caitlin noted in her post. It was just a disaster from Fox. And I know he's dealing with a foot injury. He's not 100%. Yada, yada. The fact is, at the end of the day, it was a choke. It was poor decision after poor decision. And on that layup attempt at the end of the game, if you put it in a slow motion, watch alternate angles, you can see Fox kind of like peeking over. He knew OG Anunoby was there, right, breathing down his back. He knew. And so when he says, I thought I could outrun him, I think he just, in the split second, I'm like, look, I mean, it's tough to make these split second decisions. It is in the moment. It's tough. But in that moment, I think that's where situational basketball comes up and knowing what to do in certain situations. If I get the ball in an end game situation, do I dribble out the clock or not? In that situation, there was a lack of preparation, I felt like, from Fox. And just like we talked about earlier on the other side of it with the doubling of a soft double of Brunson, leaving Wemby outside and a free lane for OG Anunoby. Just so much of that, man, for that Spurs team in the second half of that entire game. It's just, I really just can't believe it, though. And like we said, though, Tom, right? Like, Knicks deserve, obviously, a ton of credit for the comeback. But, like, the Spurs, man, they just shot themselves in the foot so many times. I know in that third quarter, just some of the stuff that they were doing earlier, I know that stuck out to you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like Fox and Wemby just were not on the same page at all in this game. Not just in the final possession when Wemby didn't know who he was supposed to be guarding and Fox was like, am I supposed to do a hard double? But even in the third quarter, I could tell that Wemby, once he got that flagrant foul, oh my, we haven't even talked about the flagrant foul that is
I'm in your head.
We could do like 6 hours on this show today because so much happened in this game. The dominance in the first quarter, the largest halftime lead on the road in finals history, melted down. And I think it contributed with the Wemby-Fox dynamic. They were just out of sorts through this entire second half. But getting in the third quarter, when you see the turnovers that Fox had and a lot of the defensive alignments that Wemby just was not in the right positioning. And they were arguing here, De'Aaron Fox is getting to get this screen. And he doesn't even look at Wemby. He just assumes that Wemby's going to roll and he throws the ball away. And luckily for the team, they were able to, he got the kick ball, but here just no awareness about what that play was supposed to be, whether Wemby was supposed to roll or whether he was supposed to jump out for the pick and pop, and he throws it away. And then if you keep watching in this third quarter, a third quarter in which they did not get a single paint point, the only time in any game this season, this postseason, a quarter went by without a team scoring in the paint. On this one, watch here. Victor Wembanyama's pointing, like, you got OG in the corner, De'Aaron. The miscommunication, OG gets a wide open corner three, and just another instance of them not having good communication, and Josh Hart sets the screen. They did not know who was supposed to guard a wide open OG. And by the way, Kev, OG's the best corner three-point shooter in the NBA. How do they not have the game plan of, like, when we have this pin down here that you're going to have to jump out? And there was mid-range jumpers that he missed, De'Aaron Fox. Remember, Josh Hart, when he missed that dunk or missed that layup, it was because De'Aaron Fox threw the ball away on a jump pass. And people are joking, like, is he shaving points right now to throw the ball away? And when Josh Hart misses the layup, I'm thinking, man, he's got to be so grateful for Josh Hart that he missed that layup, because that turnover would also be living in infamy. And also Josh Hart, he should be thanking him, Kev, because when Steph Castle forgot, or when Steph Castle got that offensive rebound, that was off of a mid-range jumper with 30 seconds left that De'Aaron Fox missed. So if Castle doesn't get that rebound and get the foul call, we're also sitting here talking about De'Aaron Fox's missed mid-range jumper with 30 seconds left. He was going for the 2-for-1, missed the shot, and it did not work. The offense was just so discombobulated. And like Dean Oliver pointed out, the effective field goal percentage, the expectation, the shot quality was abysmal. And what you're seeing from, dribbling off, it's the third quarter, dribbling off his foot. He dribbled off his foot going against OG Anunoby later in the game. Like,
it doesn't look like a veteran, Tom. He looks like the rookie, right?
That's it. And that's the issue, is that he got the extension because he is someone that they brought in to play like the wily veteran, the sage, and it was Dylan Harper. Let me ask you a question. Do you have more confidence with Dylan Harper having the ball down the stretch than De'Aaron Fox?
Not even a close. I trust Dylan Harper. Not even close. And isn't that crazy to say about Fox, a guy who used to be, once was, the clutch player of the year? Regular season award, of course. Like all of them are. It's a regular season award. Clearly not a clutch player of the playoffs. that's for sure with him. And Dylan Harper, I mean, see the numbers on screen. I can't fathom. He played 15 minutes in the second half of the game. 15 minutes. They got to get that guy more on the court, more touches. He only had 5 shots in the second half. I think you got to keep riding that guy, especially given the way he played in the first half. And Fox was awful, man. I mean, some of those plays you detailed there, Tom, I some of them I saw live, but you almost forget about them. There's 50 plays to talk about, 50 moments in the game to discuss. And, I mean, Fox, obviously, I think you're spot on. The salary, it's going to be an issue for the Spurs. They need to find a way to turn him into something better. They need to put more of more touches into the hands of Dylan Harper and keep investing in Stephon Castle. And we'll be right back after this break. The guy we haven't talked a lot about on the Spurs side as a big-time choker in this game is the Golden Boy, the supposed best player in the world, my MVP, Victor Wembanyama. He missed those 2 free throws down the stretch of the game. But not only that, he shot 3 of 14 in the second half of the game. 1 of 3 from three-point range, 2 of 11 from two-point range, 1 of 4 from the free throw line. He also had a miss earlier in the fourth quarter as well. It was as bad as the pass off of Castle's back was in game 2. I didn't think it could get any worse than that, Tom. This was so much worse for Wemby. And it is just so clear as day how much more growth he has to experience here, man. I'm not going to say he's a choker. He obviously hit the clutch shot against OKC. He's hit plenty of clutch shots in his young career. But boy, he looked like he had fear in his eyes when he was at the line for those free throws down the stretch of the game. You can see that big breath he took trying to get himself settled down after the first miss. This looks like the lump that the potential legend needs to take, right?
Yeah, look, man, he does the Giannis, right? When he gets to the free throw line, he does the Giannis where he takes all 10 seconds in order to get that shot up. He does. In this moment, notably, he took 6 seconds on both of those free throws.
Oh, I think he took that long. Did you really time that?
I watched it because in real time, I was like, he normally takes his sweet time up there just to catch his breath. And he does his routine is he closes his eyes, takes a deep breath, visualizes him making it. And then he takes another big breath and then he slowly gets into his shot and he shoots. I didn't think he wanted to be up there at all. And I think that was the issue, was he just wanted to get rid of the ball and he didn't go through his routine in the usual extended Giannis way that he normally does, because I think part of him knew, I am exhausted up here. I am not mentally right now and I don't have the confidence in myself in this moment. And he bricked both of them and he got them up super fast. And earlier in this game, or even in the postseason, you can watch, he's taking a lot longer trying to do the Giannis thing. And I think he was the only, the play that preceded that to get to the free throw line, he actually made an aggressive play, a winning play, by splitting the defenders and trying to attack the paint. And they called the foul and he was able to go to the free throw line. But I thought he played soft for the entire second half after the flagrant. After he picked up his third flagrant point, when he did the swim move on Karl Anthony Towns and elbowed him across the chin and then went to go see, you know, check on him afterwards because I think he knew, I'm screwed. I'm about to get my third point and I'm about to be on the edge of being suspended. But after that, he had, I marked this down. I rewatched the second half this morning. He had a paint touch at the 10:50 mark in the third quarter. He missed a lob layup. I think it was Stephon Castle who threw a lob. He caught it in the paint and it was kind of like 5-6 feet away from the basket. He threw it up and that was his only paint touch in the third quarter after that 10:50 mark. He didn't have another paint touch until the 11:50 mark in the fourth quarter. So he went 11 minutes without touching the paint, Victor Wembanyama, after the Karl Anthony Towns elbow. And so I think that played a big part in this, is that not only were the Spurs and the role players settling for mid-range jumpers and three-pointers, I think Victor Wembanyama too. And I was surprised. Mike Breen and Tim Legler and Richard Jefferson on the call here, they said that's a natural basketball move, but it's 100% going to be a flagrant. And the definition of a flagrant is unnecessary contact by a player. He raises his elbow and clips Karl Anthony Towns right across the chin. I don't think that that was an unnecessary move by Victor Wembanyama, but I do think that the Spurs got away with it with the Jalen Brunson head smush. And that one definitely deserved the flagrant. And it was a makeup call.
Tom. Yeah, it was. It totally was. I think Zach Zarba probably made that call. He wanted to get out of the building alive. That's what it was. He's like, I'm not going to make it back to the hotel if I don't give a flagrant here to Wemby.
New York's own Zach Zarba knows, I'm not going to go out like this. I'm not going to, in the streets of New York, I'm not going to go down for not giving him a flagrant here. And he made the right call if you are evaluating whether the Jalen Brunson smush that got uncalled deserved one. So I'm not mad at it. I just thought of all of the unnecessary contacts, for sure Jalen Brunson and when he pushed his forearm down and the follow through and then was laughing after it, you knew exactly what he was doing. Yeah. On this one with Kat, I felt like it could have been a 50-50 call. Definitely a shot to the head and the chin. Not good, and a lot of times he's going to get that flagrant regardless of the situation. But I thought that was a makeup call to make up what was obviously a flagrant one against Jalen Brunson earlier in the series.
I felt like when was the Mitchell Robinson flagrant? Was that like middle, late second quarter or something along those lines where Wemby was like, I'm in your head. I'm in your head. I felt like there were some signs. End of the second quarter, there was a moment, I think it was maybe the final minute of the second quarter, where Wemby and then another Spurs player took back-to-back threes. And I was like, oh, they're just trying to go up 30. Like, they're just trying to, it felt like some hero shots, like to really put it on them at the end of the second quarter. And that mentality just sort of carried in through the entire second half, like a bit of passiveness. Yeah, this is the play here on screen if you're watching on YouTube with Mitchell Robinson. It was a dumb foul by Mitchell Robinson. He was just fed up, annoyed from the other end. And then Wemby, I'm in your head. And it felt like at the time that he was. It felt like he was in their head at the time. And just, that's the thing, Tom. Like, I can't believe this game shifted the way it did. The Spurs at one point were shooting 60% from three in the first half of the game. It was like 65% or something like that. I remember seeing, like, I looked up at the Jumbotron. It was like Knicks, 42% from three. And then you look at Spurs, 65%. I'm like, damn, like, Knicks are playing pretty well. Like, they're shooting well. But that, and I was like, I wonder if that's sustainable for the Spurs. And then they go 3-for-17 from three in the second half, 2-for-12 at the rim. 8-of-39 in the entire second half.
Oh. They got away from everything that was going well, is that getting two feet into the paint, kicking out, driving, penetrating the paint, getting paint touches, lobs for Wemby. They went away from all of that in the second half. So Mitch Johnson, the film session that he's going to have with himself about how did we lose the process of what was working so well for us. And the offense was atrocious. You talk about the effective field goal percentage, like the expected, the shot quality, all of that. But I'm still hung up on Wemby and the way that he played after getting that flagrant, where I think ironically, I think that got in his head was, I can't be too aggressive, too physical, because I'm going to be suspended for game five. And that to me is a huge thing to watch for game five, going back to San Antonio, is what type of Victor Wembanyama aggression level are we going to get when he's on the brink? And is it going to be when you see a guy have a technical foul in a game and he knows they're not going to eject me, they're not going to send me out of this game, so I'm going to keep yapping. It's the Draymond Green. I would love to hear what Draymond Green would say to you, Kev, if you had asked him, what kind of mentality should Wemby have in game five? Because this tweet from Underdog, just on a lot of the mistakes and misses from Victor Wembanyama, like even the ones where he was playing volleyball around the basket and was able to finish eventually, still it was, can he get a clean look around the basket? And he wasn't able to do that. A lot of the scoring was from the perimeter. And look, I'm not going to kill Victor Wembanyama after this game and destroy him after, in which he had, you know, he's averaging 28, 10, 3, and 3 in his first NBA finals. He's not the reason they're down 3-1. But certainly the flagrant points that we're going to be seeing down the stretch and the clutch misses, how much staying power does that have for a 22-year-old in this NBA finals?
What do you mean by that last point, Tom? How much staying power?
I want to know how much staying power, like is the soft play in the second half, yes, and not playing with that force.
Yes. Okay, yeah,
is
that
going to continue in game five? And is he going to be scared to go to the free throw line because of the nightmare and PTSD he had in that clutch moment?
Totally. Totally. I mean, I do think it shifted things for him, unless the NBA reverses it over the next few days before game five. And they, which I wouldn't rule that out, because I also don't think that was necessarily a flagrant. It felt like a makeup flagrant to me, but I do think it changed the way he played. It did change his intensity, and that he perhaps wasn't his own head in that second half, where he played all but 57 seconds in that second half. Fatigue, missed shots for him, poor decisions. Defensively, I don't think he had quite the same intensity. I mean, in the first half, he had that play that went viral on social this morning where he stomped towards OG Anunoby's leg. It's like, that's a dirty play, really dirty. He kind of cut out some of that edgy stuff he was trying to do in the game. He shouldn't be doing that. But ultimately, he was doing those things, and it removed that from him. The Knicks, man, the fact that over the past year, they're 5-3 in the playoffs when they're down 20 plus points. Rest of the NBA is 4-71. What the hell does this team have that makes them have the ability to just stay resilient and come back in the way that they do? I mean, Josh Hart, he had the great quote after the game, where he's like, OG saved me a lifetime of regret with the missed layup. I mean, that was, I thought that was the moment MSG was going to explode when he was on the break and he misses it, kind of caught between the layup and the dunk. And like, I say all that to say, after a moment like that, where it's like, they got blue balled, right? Like the whole crowd did in that moment. And
Larry David.
Oh, do you see Larry David?
Larry David in that moment?
On the sideline. It was such a Larry David moment.
What an epic NBA Finals, dude. It's the greatest. This is why the NBA is the best. You're not going to get this in baseball. You're not going to get this in football. You're not going to get this in soccer. This only happens at Madison Square Garden in the NBA. What a moment for the league that you have the New York Knicks coming back in that fashion once again. That note from Kirthika, where it was like 5-3 when they trail by 20 points in the playoffs over the last two seasons. The drama, the Jalen Brunson, how he is nails when it comes to crunch time moments. And I have so much more confidence in Jalen Brunson leading this Knicks team than I do on De'Aaron Fox, than I do on anybody on the floor. When the ball is his hands, I feel like there's going to be good outcomes on the play. And you just can't say the same for Victor Wembanyama right now, or De'Aaron Fox, or no, like no shot against them, 21 years old Stephon Castle or 20 year old Dylan Harper. It's just when you have a captain like that, captain clutch, able to get to the cup in big moments and draw two when you have Victor Wembanyama on you. And the 3-pointer here, look at this shot over incredible. A dude who's listed at 7'5", but probably way taller than that, to bring it to 1 point deficit down the stretch. He's probably exhausted. He's somebody that had to leave game one. And this is where the De'Aaron Fox, he's playing through an ankle injury. I don't want to hear it. Jalen Brunson also left with a knee injury in game one and got his leg stepped on by Luke Kornet. And we're now saying this guy is the best clutch performer we've ever seen. And on the other side, De'Aaron Fox is making these brain farts time and time again. And juxtaposing those two, where Jalen Brunson has 29 points per game in this series and De'Aaron Fox has 14, it's just incredible. A guy taking a pay cut to help build this team is now averaging close to 30 points per game and making these clutch moments time and time again in these huge moments in Madison Square Garden. It's great theater. Like, you cannot write this. And shout out to Ben Stiller for trying to capture this film because he wants to do a documentary. It's going to be the greatest documentary of all time. Like, it's going to be epic, the film that they've captured on this magical ride for the New York Knicks.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what they put together there. And with Brunson, yeah, just an epic night by him. As you said, we talked about OG with his clutch plays on both ends of the floor as well. A name that we really haven't mentioned too much is Karl-Anthony Towns. And Towns hit this step-back three-pointer earlier in the fourth quarter. And when he hit that shot, that's when I was like, oh, my God, the Knicks are going to win this game. That was the first time I felt like, oh, my God, the Knicks are going to win it. And that changed multiple times over the last 7-8 minutes or whatever. But then didn't realize it live in the moment. But on that final inbounds play by the Spurs, where Castle caught it, it was bobbled, they didn't even get a shot off, Cat got his fingertips on it. Karl-Anthony Towns was defending the inbounder, and he got his hand on the ball and slowed it down. Who knows how it could have resulted? Castle might have caught a lob dunk, won the game for the Spurs. Maybe he misses the shot, the pass is off. Who knows? But the fact is Cat got his fingertips on that ball and grazed it just enough to slow it down and completely muck up that play for the Spurs. And this is a guy who had two amazing first two games, a not-so-good game three. Up and down game four. He hit, it was amazing in the second half. For him to have that moment just was so awesome as well in that final play. Just that every centimeter counts, Tom, with your length and size. And he hopped up there and perfectly timed that pass to deflect it as Harper passed it in.
I mean, what diametric opposite coaching strategies we saw from these two head coaches, where yeah. Mike Brown's like, I'm going to put my biggest guy here, Karl-Anthony Towns, on the ball so that you're not going to get a good look on this inbounds pass. And it's not completely apples to apples, the situation that the Knicks faced and the Spurs faced there down the stretch. But to put Cat on the ball, a guy who's so long, and then have Mitch Robinson also out there to guard Wemby, a completely different strategy than what you saw from Mitch Johnson, who put Victor Wembanyama on Mikal Bridges and then left OG Anunoby to just inbound as he will and then ride into the paint unimpeded. So incredible play from Karl-Anthony Towns. And I will say, if he doesn't get the hand on the ball, what happens, Kev? Like, Stephon Castle had a lane to the basket, and a good redirection is that maybe you think that Wemby is going to go there at the rim for that tip-in, but it was Stephon Castle, as Wemby was the decoy setting that screen, and Cat got his hand on the ball. I mean, there's so much that happened in this game. I'm glad you brought that up, is that Cat's defense there, not just a great play, but also Mike Brown, great job snuffing out that play and just saying, like, we're going to put Cat on this and you're not going to get a look. Notably, who was taking out the ball? It was Dylan Harper, the rookie, not De'Aaron Fox, which I think De'Aaron Fox was way out off of the side of the play, not even involved, which tells you something about the confidence that the Spurs had in De'Aaron Fox making the right play there.
One other note on that last play, Ethan Strauss, House of Strauss, great writer on his Substack, pointed out how the clock didn't start when Cat got his fingertips on it. And so, like, in theory, like, let's just say Castle had scored, what would have happened if I mean, can you imagine the controversy today if the shot clock operator didn't start the clock because they missed the tip on the inbound pass there? If that's what gave Castle enough time to score on the play. And even if you watch, like I posted an alternate angle on X earlier today, even after Castle touches the ball, I feel like the clock started a little late. So, I mean, it all was a bit like everybody was a little nervous at the end of that game. But amazing play by Cat. I mean, I think for walking out of MSG last night, man, well, not before, even before walking out, like nobody was leaving. Like, you know how usually after basketball games, like the ushers are trying to get people out. People were partying, like just sing along to the music. Don't stop believing. One More Time by Daft Punk was playing. People were like, it turned into a club almost for, you know, 10 minutes or whatever. And then walking out of the arena after that, people chanting, "Let's go Knicks. Let's go next," and, you know, F Wemby, and, you know, this and that, and chanting OG, OG down the escalators leaving. It was truly remarkable, Tom. It really was one of the best atmospheres I've ever been in. It was the best atmosphere I've ever been in for a sporting event. I think the only thing that's come close to me is two things. Isaiah Thomas, the game he had after his sister died, and he had 40-plus mm-hmm. points for the Celtics in the postseason against the Wizards. And then, what was it, 07 season, I think, for the Red Sox when they had four home runs in a row, and I was at that game with my dad, Red Sox-Yankees. They had four home runs in a row, and just Fenway, each home run, like first home run, you know, normal, like, you know, excitement, second home run, bigger, third home run, exhilarated, and then fourth home run, like the roof, you know, just like blew off, you know, like it just is an incredible moment. But this one topped all that in terms of just the feeling in that place. I mean, like Mike Breen said, felt like that place was shaking. It really, really did feel like it was shaking. It was incredible.
It really was the NBA at its pinnacle. And I shout out to my guy, Rob Lopez, who did the Where Amazing Happens edit on the final play, because we need more of those moments where the old campaign for the NBA where amazing happens and you have the piano music, the dramatic music set to black and white grayscale. And it's just, it's pure theater, and the athletic performance, the Victor Wembanyama, as tall as he is, he's got this, you know, 12-foot standing reach, Jalen Brunson shooting it over him. And then out of nowhere, here comes OG Anunoby, a guy that has been playing out of his mind. I would venture to say that he, in my book, is the finals MVP through four games, a guy that they got as a heist in the trade with the Toronto Raptors. Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett, basically straight up for OG Anunoby, and then bring him in, and he has been everything and more for the New York Knicks. What a story for a guy to come into this New York Knicks franchise and become everything that you wanted out of a 3-and-D guy, but now he's a go-to scorer, getting downhill, making smart plays, where in the NBA Finals, he's now putting up star numbers. And Jalen Brunson said after the game, "We got a superstar in there," and that's what he's playing like here in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, he's so special. I mean, like we talked about after the Eastern Conference Finals, this Knicks team is just masterfully constructed through savvy trades, risky maneuvers, gutsy decisions, never having a sense of complacency. Like even this year, just trading for Alvarado, you know, that helped win them this game four at MSG. Alvarado, that acquisition was a big one, even though he's not the biggest name necessarily. And they're in this position up 3-1. I'm not ruling out San Antonio winning game five on Saturday, but I don't think they have any chance of winning three in a row against the Knicks. I just don't see it happening, and I do think it's going to finish up in game five in San Antonio. My expectation, my prediction for that game is you are going to see, even more so than games one and two, that arena feel like a Knicks game. I saw some stat posted last night. I don't remember what it was. I was like 1:30 a.m. in the morning scrolling through X because I couldn't sleep, and someone said like 37% of ticket sales for that game are like New York based. I don't even know if it was real. It might not be, but like, it was just, I don't know. I saw it last night scrolling. I know. I think the atmosphere could be
souls away from San Antonio. Remember Michelle Beadle on Illuminati last week was saying like, I don't know how we keep out Knicks fans, but like, this is going to be something we're going to watch is like the, how many Knicks fans are going to be in attendance. And you got to imagine the flight cost, the hotel to potentially see the Knicks win the NBA championship with Jalen Brunson in game five over Victor Wembanyama. Oh my God. And just one final thing before we go to game five. Skeets posted this and I couldn't believe it. OG Anunoby's putback was his only offensive rebound in this series. It was his first offensive rebound this entire series. He's averaging 24 points a game, but just two turnovers and one offensive rebound. So he's not crashing the boards because a lot of times he's the one making the shot and he doesn't need to crash the boards, but just an amazing theatrical, just everything. The drama could not script it any better. The way that OG Anunoby did that move for his first offensive rebound to win game four and put the Knicks up 3-1. Just sensational play from OG. Just incredible.
I love the post-game moment last night when he was asked, how does it feel to hit a game winner in the NBA Finals? He's like, it feels cool. And the whole media room erupted in laughter and he cracked a smile at it too. OG's the best, man. He's about, I mean, if the Knicks close this out, I mean, we saw him win a championship earlier in his career with the Toronto Raptors as a young role player, basically playing a 3-and-D role for that Raptors team during the 2018-19 season. And I think he, if I remember correctly, did he miss that whole postseason? Am I remembering this correctly? Was he out for that Raptors run? Am I just delusional here? Am I forgetting something?
Think about the story here when it comes to, I laughed it off about the whole CAA connection that they got OG Anunoby because he's a CAA guy, and the Julius Randle trade to get Karl Anthony Towns, it was another case of the Knicks just getting their own guys. But they got OG Anunoby for a reason, is that they felt like with Pascal Siakam, with Fred VanVleet, with the Toronto Raptors, he was underperforming and that he had a lot more left in his tank to prove that he can be a star player in this league. And he's been every bit of that in this NBA Finals.
Yeah, and by the way, just fact checking myself, that was true. Like 2019, he missed the entire postseason because he had an emergency appendectomy right before the playoffs. Right before the playoffs began. So he's got a ring, but he wasn't playing in that postseason for the Raptors. So this is really a chance for him to truly earn that championship ring and possibly the finals MVP. I think it's going to be close, Tom. I mean, for the finals MVP vote, let's just assume like Knicks win in five. Between Brunson, Cat, and OG Anunoby, there's three really strong choices for the New York Knicks, and I don't think that'll be quite clear until Saturday night if the series does indeed conclude on Saturday. We'll be right back. One quick thing before we get out of here, Tom, a non-finals thing. The Giannis Antetokounmpo stuff is getting very interesting. Tyler Hero's brother made a comment on a Tyler Hero Instagram post hinting about Miami. Giannis Antetokounmpo made a post on Instagram hinting about Miami. And yet, you have Bill Simmons on his podcast last night after previously stating that he doesn't think the Celtics are in on Giannis, stating that he thinks they are indeed in on Giannis. You have Jake Fisher over at the Stein Line saying that he believes Miami is very worried about Boston. And I am here to add that I have heard Boston is shopping people around a lot right now, that Boston is making calls. Boston is open to trading anybody besides Jason Tatum. And that doesn't necessarily mean they land Giannis at the end of the day. But I do believe, based off of everything, all the conversations I've had, is that the Celtics are in on Giannis. and that they are making a push on him, and that this seems to be currently a two-team race with Milwaukee to acquire Giannis Antetokounmpo. We'll see how it plays out, Tom, but this feels very, very real to me that Giannis could get traded before the draft, I think after the finals. I don't think that'll happen this week. I think it would happen after the finals conclude. But we seem to be moving towards something pretty big here, pretty seismic happening in the NBA with the Giannis Antetokounmpo trade.
Yeah, very interesting. I think Boston should go after Giannis Antetokounmpo. If it means giving up Jaylen Brown, I think I make that move. I wrote about it in midseason for TomTheFinder.com, where I don't think both teams at that point in the midseason would trade Giannis for Jaylen Brown and whatever picks you want to throw in there or ancillary pieces have to go in there to make the salary work. But I do think after the postseason run with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and the comments from Jaylen Brown, I think it's much more likely now than it was midseason while things were rolling for the Boston Celtics led by Jaylen Brown. It was a thought exercise then. But the way that you're reporting this is that basically they're shopping everybody except for Jason Tatum, or at least having discussions on everybody around Jason Tatum. That would imply that Jaylen Brown is not in that untouchable category. And is that your understanding? Is that Jaylen Brown, if it means trading for Giannis, that he would be on the table? Do you think that that would be a possibility?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. But I don't think the Bucks want Jaylen Brown. I think it would have to be a third team involved or possibly even more teams involved. So I think it's probably, I think a Giannis deal is probably a lot simpler to Miami. From the conversations I've had, is it seems like it would probably just be Milwaukee-Miami. Maybe there's third team iterations involved that I am not privy to, but it seems a more simple deal. Boston, I think it would be a bit more complex. And that's that's where it's going to be so fascinating this entire week, Tom. And I think Boston is in the right, personally, to pursue Giannis this aggressively. I'd put Jaylen Brown and Derek White out on the table. I'd be extremely aggressive. This is a guy who finished top three in MVP voting like 8 years in a row. He's still one of the three, four, five best players in the entire NBA. I'm not going to let one weird year, one injury-riddled year during a breakup change what he is as a player. He is a transformational talent. And talk about, you know, coming back from down 2-0 in the NBA Finals, he's the guy who led that a few years back against the Phoenix Suns and Mikal Bridges. He knows what that feels like to blow those leads. And Giannis Antetokounmpo wasn't on the other side of that. He is still that player and still a guy that can be the best player on a championship team. And I haven't seen much decline despite him being in his early 30s at this point. Boston should be going for him hard. So should Miami. And the Bucks should be expecting an absolute massive haul here. My only question is, Tom, is could there be another mystery team out there, a surprise team that comes out over the top and makes the best offer out there? Because what is it always with these star players? Like Paul George, he wants L.A. He wants L.A. Well, he ends up in Oklahoma City. He actually ended up pretty happy there. He signed an extension playing with Russell Westbrook. Kawhi Leonard wanted L.A. He wanted out of San Antonio. Where'd he go? To the Toronto Raptors. And what happened? He won a finals. He left anyway. But so many of these star trades, there's these mystery teams that are out there that come out of nowhere and trade for the player, despite the fact that the player says, I'm not signing there. I'm not signing an extension, but you get him in your building and you hope you have a shot of keeping that guy and convincing him to stay and trying to win with that team. So I wonder, could there be a mystery team for Giannis Antetokounmpo aside from Boston and Miami that are the two obvious potential destinations for him that nobody's talking about? And that's one of the thoughts on my mind right now. And I think listeners of this podcast should be thinking about it too.
And I wouldn't be surprised if a team that had an awful year and a run here in Houston Rockets, if they don't hear these reports and say, wait, hold on, we've got the picks, we've got the young players, we can make this deal happen if they wanted to. Now, I don't know if Houston, who they put into a deal, but you can guarantee that the Houston Rockets are not satisfied after an embarrassing 6-game loss to the Lakers in the first round this season. So I wouldn't count out the Houston Rockets into that. And also Orlando with the Sean Sweeney, the top assistant coach for Mitch Johnson, taking the Orlando job. They don't have the picks to get a deal done, but just in the same way that the Boston Celtics are trying to figure out how do they gather enough assets or the right pieces to go for it, I wouldn't be surprised if Orlando, given the way things ended there, that they're not looking at making a serious change going into next season, not just the head coach. So maybe they get involved here in requiring a lot more draft picks because they gave them all most of them away in the Desmond Bane trade. But I wouldn't count out Houston or Orlando in those sweepstakes.
Yeah, I think there could be a surprise team out there. And I mean, it's a big week over here at Yahoo Sports. We get the finals, and then we also have the all-new 2026 soccer pick'em. It's here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. You can make your picks each round, earn points, and climb the leaderboard. You can play solo, create a private group with friends, or join a public group to play with other fans, or even join our Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat me and Tom Haverstroh. I don't know anything about soccer, Tom, but if people want to try to beat us in our soccer pick'em, join at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. I don't know anything about this. I don't know who's going to win, but hopefully it's a lot of fun,
the team
exciting
with
games.
Brunson and OG Anunoby, I'm picking that team.
I know, yeah. Give me that team. Give me Captain Clutch and OG. Tom, man, what a night, dude. Okay. This is a 10 out of 10 NBA Finals. I don't expect any different on Saturday night. I think we're going to get another great game on Saturday. These are two very equally matched teams. I hope we're in for another epic one on Saturday, man.
I'm not with you. I think the Spurs have a chance here to get to a game seven. You say zero chance of them winning.
No. I think zero of three in a row, but not zero to get to a game seven.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think this is still a series. I think it's a series.
Scott Foster, the extender. You putting on your basketball Illuminati? You plugging in that mic right now, Tom?
I did not say that, but it wouldn't surprise me after game one, he was the referee, that he comes back for one of those final three
games.
It's
been a while.
Yeah. But I think this series, we'll see what happens with the flagrant. That's what I'm going to be watching, the flagrant ruling from the NBA. I thought it was ridiculous that they didn't give him a flagrant for the Jalen Brunson smush. And Monty McCutcheon after that joined ESPN and said, you know, a lot of things, but not going through the rules about what constitutes a flagrant foul. I think the NBA, we'll see what happens with that ruling. But yeah, Wemby has to be better. De'Aaron Fox has to be better. And like we talked about, Mitch Johnson has to be better. We'll see what happens with the adjustments in game five.
I can't wait, Tom. I cannot wait for Saturday night. I know I'll be live on YouTube after Saturday. You joining me on Saturday night, Tom?
I'll be around.
You want to come on Saturday night? Yeah. So Tom and I will be back on Saturday night after game five of Spurs Knicks. Who knows? Maybe we'll crown a new champion. Maybe we'll be looking ahead to game six. You never know in the NBA. Tom, thank you so much for joining me, man. Everybody for watching us live here on YouTube, please be sure to subscribe if you have not done so already. It really does help us out if you give us a like on the video as well. Thanks, Tom. Have a good day, everybody.